The end and design of our meeting being accomplished at Carter's Run, I went on that evening to Captain Thomas McClanahan's, a worthy gentleman at whose house I had the dispute with a church parson. There I was informed that if I preached next day at Mr. Manifest, I should be taken by Squire Strother and Squire Slaughter. I sat down and counted the cost. Now listen to this. I sat down and counted the cost, freedom or confinement, liberty or prison. It admitted of no dispute. Having ventured all upon Christ, I determined to suffer all for him. Next morning I set off for Mr. Manifest, at whose house I was to preach, accompanied with the captain and his whole family. When I arrived at the place of preaching, Mr. Manifest addressed me thus, "Sir, you may expect to be taken up today if you preach. A certain fine, I am told, will be imposed upon you, and so much upon each individual that will attend your preaching, as well as a fine of 20 pounds on me for granting you my house to preach in. This the justices have made me acquainted with and have advised me for my own advantage not to suffer the meeting." Mr. Manifest, being a man under awakening impressions, told me not to flinch from my duty, if I thought it a duty, to go on. I requested him to show me the line on his land. Now we're talking about a property line, okay? He said, "Show me the line on your land," and ordered a table to be taken out and placed with its feet on each side of the line. Whether it might have answered any purpose or not, I cannot tell. However, I told him that when I stood on the table, I would not preach on his land no more than on another's. What he was trying to do is to avoid having this man fined 20 pounds for letting him preach on his land. So we'll just bring a table out here and set it down, straddle your land and other guy's land, and that ought to give us some kind of hitch, not to get you in so much trouble, perhaps. Preaching being over, I concluded with prayer and heard a rustling noise in the woods. And before I opened my eyes to see who it was, I was seized by the collar by two men while standing on the table. Stepping down off the table and beholding a number of others walking up, it produced a momentary confusion in me. The magistrates instantaneously demanded me what I was doing there with such a conventicle of people. I replied that I was preaching the gospel of Christ to them. They asked me who gave me authority so to do. I answered, "He that was the author of the gospel had a right to send forth whom he had qualified to dispense it." They retorted with me with abusive epithets, and then inquired of me if I had any authority from any man to preach. So they told me that I must give security not to teach, preach, or exhort for 12 months, and they are go to jail. I chose the last alternative. So he went to jail in Culpeper, Virginia. When first imprisoned, I entertained a persuasion and belief that I would be singly upheld with suffering and supporting grace. But I had not been there long before it pleased God to withdraw from me the amiable light of his countenance, in consequence of which I got into doubtful disputations about my imprisonment and whether I was truly sent of Christ to preach the gospel or not. What he fell into a real doubt about things is it worth all this stuff? And he began to think about, well, I'll go ahead and pay my fine and things of that nature. Well, my friends round about the courthouse supplied me amply with wood, it being an extreme cold winter and a great demand for it. My wood was exhausted very fast, and I was often supplied, The tavern keeper, who was also my jailer, was obliged to furnish me with victuals and water to drink, but my portion of the latter was scanty enough in consequence of a scorching fever which attended me in the night, and as the former I had little recourse to it, as I chiefly subsisted on what my kind friend sent me or what I purchased with my own money. When I would be preaching through the little iron grate, the wicked and persecutors would ride up at a gallop among my hearers until I've seen persons of respectability under their horses' feet. Now, the reason he knew that people were out there is they would take a long pole and tie a white rag on it and come and hold it up, and he could see it, and he would preach, though he couldn't I always see the people. Clubs have been shaken over the heads of other individuals with threatenings if ever they attended there again, whilst the poor Negroes, now here are the people who came to hear him preach, have been stripped and subjected to stripes, and myself threatened with being shut up in total darkness if ever I presume to preach to the people again. To such a height of arrogance and wickedness have these miscreants went that when I have been engaged in preaching the gospel of my dear Redeemer to the people, they have gotten a table, bench, or something else, stood upon it, and made their water right in my face. And you understand that's a euphemism of urinating. In other words, when he was preaching, they'd get the people in jail or outside of jail would get up on the table and urinate in his face while he was preaching. A number of my persecutors resorted at the tavern of a Mr. Stewart at the courthouse, for there they plotted to blow me up with powder that night, as I was informed. The person employed to provide the materials lived about 12 miles from there, and on whom the awful judgments of God were soon afterwards manifested, as will be seen hereafter. All the powder they could collect, according to my information, was but a half a pound. That's gunpowder. They had fixed it for explosion, expecting I was sitting perpendicularly over it. But in this they were a little mistaken. Fire was put to it, and it went off with a considerable noise, forcing up a small plank from which I received no damage. I was singing a hymn at the time the explosion went off, and continued singing until I finished it. The next scheme they pursued was to smoke me with brimstone and Indian pepper. Now, some of this stuff I don't quite understand. Brimstone is limestone, isn't that correct? Limestone rocks that have been fired. And if you put limestone when it's burning, it'll give off a very dangerous smoke, isn't that correct? If you ever built a big field, a fire in a field burning, and you put limestone rock in it, you know, they'll crumble and come apart. And so this is evidently what he's talking about here. Indian pepper, would that be what we always call what? I don't know. Indian turnips, have you ever, you know what those are? Remember the deal? Bad stuff. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it's Indian pepper. They had to wait certain opportunities to accomplish the same. The lower part of the jail door was a few inches above its cell. When the wind would be favorable, they would get pods of Indian pepper, empty them of their natural contents, and fill them with brimstone, and set them a-burning so that the whole jail would be filled with a killing smoke, and oblige me to go to cracks and put my mouth to them in order to prevent my suffocation. At length, a certain doctor and the jailer formed a scheme to poison me. And what they were going to do is take, and this fellow's name was James Ireland. He was referred to as Little Jamie. He was a Scotchman who had come over here as a young man from Scotland and had been converted and had become a Baptist preacher. And they were always talking about Little Jamie. He was a very, very small man. But anyway, they said, well, look, we will arrange for you to be set free from jail. We'll take you over to the doctor's house. And the doctor's house, the doctor will take care of you. Well, James Ireland had heard that he was just taken there so that it could poison him. So he refused to be let out of jail and go. But in prison, he tells about meeting a huge man who was an Irish Catholic. And this guy was in jail, and he was put in jail with him, and the fellow wanted to escape, but James Arnold was afraid if he did escape, I'm going to be partly to blame for it, and they're really going to get me in some serious trouble. So he told the guy, if you tell on me, if you start trying to escape, I'm going to tell on you, which made this big guy really mad at him, and he thought that maybe this fellow would do him in. But he tells about being in jail. And the next morning, what he had done here, he rented a bed. The jail didn't have a bed. You paid $5 a month for a bed and some other furniture to be put in jail so he could sleep comfortably. Next morning, feeling the effects of the cold, rented myself a very good bed and furniture at $5 a month. This other man, he's talking about when he lay up on a raw cowhide on the floor, sustaining the cold air which had access to him from every direction without a cover over him. In order to gain his goodwill and affection, I was studying how to give him the enjoyment of a berth in bed with myself. But he was very dirty, and I rather feared had some companions, as are said to be produced by dirtiness, and my delicate taste could not take up with such a partner. Perceiving he had two pretty good shirts, I told him I pitied him on account of his cold berth and was willing to make that as comfortable as I could, provided he would not take offense at my liberty. I told him of my delicate taste and that he must have his linens washed, which we soon got done. I took him then as a partner in the bed with me and soon found that the comforts he enjoyed from his new berth had gained me his affection. Now, the first discovery I had of his attachment to me was in his resenting injuries done or attempted to be done to me. It was not uncommon for persecutors to reach their hands and arms through the grates to lay hold of me, and he stood there ready to resent it. Seeing I bore with patience their insults, he could not, for as soon as he could get a chance, he would reach his hand through, and if he caught them by the hair of their heads, he was sure to bring it with him. So he's saying, I didn't remonstrate with the people who had done all these things to me. I took it. This guy, I'd let him sleep on my bed, and it was warm, and he was upset, so he was taken care of for me. Doesn't say that he really rebuked him all that much for it. But he talks about their praying together, and the fellow that was from Ireland prayed in Latin. And so Brother Ireland said, I told him that wasn't right, that we needed to pray in the same tongue, because when I was down praying in English, he was praying in Latin, and that's caused a lot of confusion. But he taught the man to read in jail, taught him the alphabet, taught him to read in jail, and he said that in a very short period of time he was reading the Bible, both the Old and New Testament. This is a personal diary that James Ireland kept. Very interesting thing. At the end of near the end of his life, he and his whole family were poisoned. A maid in the house where he lived, evidently because of an influence from another person who hated them for being Baptist people, went to Culpeper and bought arsenic, brought it home, and this maid began to put the arsenic in their tea and food. He had a little 12-year-old girl that died of arsenic poisoning, and Mr. Ireland himself was near death for several days, until finally a black maid who had seen this woman hiding some arsenic in a rock in the fireplace, take the rock out and hide it, had seen her, and she told someone what had happened, and they finally found this bag of arsenic, and it so weakened him that he did not live a long time after that, but it was not the immediate cause of his death. But this is just one man. Okay, this is what happened in Virginia, not in 1600. This is in 1767, 17, and later dates of time. History of the Baptist in Virginia, Robert Baylor Semple. It's just the constant writings of these things. One thing is very interesting to me. There was a church, Reverend John Leland from New England came down to preach at Mount Pony Church. The church unanimously called him to the administration of the word and ordinances without ordination by the imposition of hands. This being contrary to the established rule of the Catoctin Association, indeed the Baptist General generally, when the church sent her delegates to the next association, they were rejected. You ever hear that? So the guy said, look, he was ordained, but they didn't lay hands on him. They said, you're not really ordained, so they wouldn't seat their messengers. The habits of the Baptists of New England and those in Virginia respecting apparel were also much at variance. Mr. Leland and others adhered to the customs of New England, each one putting on such apparel as he suited his own fancy. This was offensive to some members of the church. The contention on this account came so sharp on the 25th of July, 1779, about 12 members dissented from the Varsity Church and were, of course, excluded. But this Mount Pony Church, where James Ireland was in prison, it was a very small church, a very small prison, rather, and it was abandoned for a bigger jail site somewhere else in the city. This jail was torn down, and a lot was offered to sale. The Mount Pony Church had had their church burned down, and they were on the outskirts of Culpeper. And so when they found out that the lot where their brethren had been in prison was for sale, they bought it and built a Baptist church on it. So that's some sort of a way of getting satisfaction out of it. Here the imprisoned preachers and religious liberty in Virginia, just account after account. And this fellow here went to the records. This is not just heresy, this is not just stories that were told. He went to the records and did research and found the incidents and where the monuments were. So if you ever want to go to Virginia and spend a few days of good vacation, there's a tremendous number of these areas that are identified here that would be easy for you to look up and see. Oh yeah, you sure can. Well, these are the Baptists who rejected the landmark movement, okay? The Baptists in Virginia, almost to a church, rejected J.R. Graves and the landmark movement. Now, they're the people who are extremely liberal in Virginia. I don't know of any churches that are in the, that the, some of the independent churches may be, well, that's where Jerry Falwell is, but anyway, you know, you might find some of those that we would find fellowship with, but the Southern Baptist churches in Virginia are really liberal, have led in the liberal movement, which we look at this that, you know, it's just almost without exception that that's what's happening. Patrick Henry, as I said, defended these people. On the printed program of that service, this statement appeared. Jeremiah Moore was imprisoned in the old colonial jail in Alexandria in 1773 by order of a vestry of the Established Church of England for preaching the gospel. He was defended by Patrick Henry in these traditional words: "Great God, gentlemen, a man in prison for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ." That's the same Patrick Henry who said in the liberty argument there. He was not a Baptist, but he was a great friend of Baptist people. It's we give you a year and a day. It was just an old way of that. Absolutely, the year's up. You got one day to change your mind, and after that day you go to jail. It was a not much of a grace period, but that's exactly what it was. It was just a quirk in the system of law that they
no family members were allowed to we hear a lot about the general Baptist and particular Baptist throughout the history. What the formation of the denominations that we know today, did that happen much later, or pretty much
we're seeing the root system of it, yes. In this area of the country, pretty well the things that we're seeing developing at this period of time just went on and developed. The war gave us some different, for instance, gave us the division in Presbyterian churches between the Cumberland Presbyterians and the war between states. I mean, the Cumberland Presbyterians were the southern Southern Presbyterians who fought in the Civil War on the South Side. So we get some more division there, but generally speaking, this is where we're getting into. The General Baptist in England, the General Baptist in America, and the General Baptist in America that you go over to Kentucky and see now, the foot washers, these are the same descendants, these folks. All right, good night. Hope you have a safe journey home.